This is the Photography Podcast on photography.ca, episode number 99, Controlling Brightness in Photography. Hey there, photo lovers. How's it going? And welcome to the 99th Photography Podcast on photography.ca. My name is Marco, and as always, we're coming to you from Montreal, Quebec, Canada. For today's show, I'm recording in Laurier Park in Montreal. Hope there's not too much ambient noise. For today's show, we're going to talk about brightness in photography, and we're going to be talking more about general brightness, the planning during the shooting, as well as the post-processing in an effort to make our images stronger. But before we get into it, I always like to thank people for their last comments on number 98, even though it's been a while, sorry. Where we talked about cropping in photography. And we got quite a few comments from Northstone, Scorpio E, Howard J, Ishak, Bill Sorensen, and Usakme, U-S-E-A-K-M-E. Thanks so much for the comments, everyone. Northstone in particular left a comment. Thought I'd read it. Marco, great podcast. I agree with you regarding the cropping, as more often than not, it can be difficult to isolate the crap in the viewfinder. The only thing I would add is that if the photographer has in mind to print out an image large size, say A1 plus size, with the intention to preserve detail, surely there would be some image degradation if too much is sliced out of the original image, that is, unless someone had a high megapixel camera. Best wishes, Northstone. Thanks so much, Northstone, and yes, I agree. That's really true, and it is something to be aware of. If you do crop out too much of the photo, you are mucking with the size of the photo, actually. So if you open the image in something like Photoshop and you look at image size, you could see the actual size of the image when printed. If you're going to crop from that image and you try and print it at that same original size, you will be adding pixels. Now, depending on how much you add, that may sacrifice quality a bit. At the end of the day, we used to do something very similar when we used to print in the darkroom. When we crop parts out of the image, we did this by raising the enlarger's head, which basically made the remaining parts of the image larger, but depending on how large they were, at a certain point, they started losing sharpness. So it's just something to be aware of. If you're going to crop out 90% of the image and you're left with 10% of the image, your final image will have to be smaller, obviously. If you try and enlarge it too much, it's going to look like crap. So it's definitely a good point. Thanks so much, Northstone. Okay then, so let's just get right into today's podcast. And if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, or you've been reading, practicing on your photography, you know that controlling brightness is a key element to making your photographs stronger. If you are new to this idea, I covered some of this in podcast number 46, Controlling Brightness and Other Distractions, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But in a nutshell, the eye has a tendency to focus on or follow the brightest parts of an image. And if those bright parts are not properly taken into account, the image will surely be less strong. So how do we plan for this, since brightness is always such an issue? The answer is not eliminating the brightest tones in the image, and often these are specular highlights, which are like little catch lights in the eyes, or the sun, or reflections off the water. We don't want to eliminate these bright tones because these brightest highlights add richness to a photo. We just need to plan during the shooting and post-processing to control them better, and this podcast is meant to offer up a few tips. So first off, let's start with exposure. You know, on a bright day, there will usually be too much range in the scene to capture details in both the shadows and the highlights. Yes, you can use HDR, but this is not always easy with all subjects. It's just easier to go out in friendlier, less contrasty light, which might be like earlier in the morning or earlier in the evening, or during overcast days. You may just find that you'll be able to retain that highlight detail with more ease if you avoid going out during the bright, bright sun, or avoiding scenes with too much contrast. Now, metering. Metering is also key to this. Now, you can let the camera average out any scene, and it will usually give you a good exposure in most cases when there is a fair representation of light to dark tones. But in this case, all the camera does is averaging. It does not do any thinking at all because, I've mentioned in previous podcasts, cameras have no brain. If in that scene there is a very important bright element, the camera may get the exposure for that element wrong based on the other elements in the scene. You know, let's say you have a collection of white roses surrounded by large dark rocks. The camera will likely overexpose the flowers, and sometimes that overexposure is so great that the flowers will lose all their detail. They will become clipped, and there's no easy way to get those pixels back. So in this case and many other cases, if the whites aren't specular whites, then basing the exposure on the white element ensures that the detail is kept. Now, how do we do this? If you don't know, most DSLRs are capable of spot metering, and this is basically where the camera bases the exposure on a teeny percentage of the scene. But if that element is the focal point, then it's an incredibly useful tool. Just remember that a spot metered reading is a reflected reading, so it may need to be adjusted if you're not metering already mid-gray. So if you're spot metering something dark, you will have to close down, you will have to reduce the exposure, and if you're spot metering something bright, you will usually have to increase your exposure by 1 to 2 stops. Just keep that in mind. Although most new cameras offer a spot metering, read your manual just to make sure yours can. Another really important point, and sometimes it's hard to control, but being aware of the contrast of the different elements in a scene. So in any given scene, there may be elements that are brighter than the focal point. How those elements interact can strengthen or weaken an image. A good example is a bride in a white dress. If that bride is light-skinned, the dress will be brighter than the bride's face. And this is normal and fine. Through good exposure and metering, we can hold all the subtle detail in that white dress. But what about like the other elements in a scene? Let's say there are light-colored buildings or a washed-out sky in the background. I mean, those buildings or the sky may compete for our attention if they're too light. So then we have light face, light dress, light buildings, or a light sky, which may cause our eye to wander away from the focal point, which is the bride and her dress. Well, now let's say through a simple shifting, we move that bride in front of some darker trees or a darker building. Now the bride pops against the background. And now the fact that the dress is brighter than the face, it doesn't matter as much because the face and the dress act as a unit and they command our attention against the darker background. If you're a landscaper or landscape photographer, you'll need graduated neutral density filters to hold back the bright sky for this exact reason. And we did a full podcast on this with Darwin Wiggett, number 77, on neutral density filters and graduated neutral density filters and polarizers. So you could check that out if you want a refresher as well. But basically, again, being aware of the tones or contrasts of the other elements in a scene versus the focal points in an image is a key thing to plan for. Now, even though we've planned for stuff, there's often stuff that we've missed. And this is where post-processing is going to come into it. Post-processing can make an image sing, and post-processing is essential. So many of the great modern masters all dodged and burned extensively. And they did this to strengthen the image as a whole. Adams, Eugene Smith, Weston, they all dodged and burned. Many of them even used bleach. So they would actually take bleach and physically make white parts on a print even whiter. And they did this to get that extra pop. And it wasn't cheating for them, and it's not cheating for me. You know, these days, using Photoshop or other similar graphic programs, dodging and burning, dodging is to make something brighter, burning is to make something darker. And again, we do this in an effort to guide the viewer's eye in just the way we want. So if there is a bright distraction part of the image that we neglected to see when we took the shot, you know, we could burn it in through post-processing, you know, once we've done the shot, and again, that's going to make it sing. What you do want to remember, and it's a real important point, is that you don't want to burn in specular highlights as a general rule. These are those catch lights or, you know, reflections off the water. They're just too bright. And if you try and burn them in, or if you try and burn in something too white, you'll often get this muddy gray. Some shots, once the whites are blown, they're just dead, and you're better just to forget about it than work on it. Sorry, but that's just the way it is. In film days, it was the exact opposite. You would expose for the shadows, but once it was too underexposed, there was no detail. It had no meat. It had no grain. It was just dead, and there's nothing you're able to do about it. There's no magic to get back what you haven't captured originally, basically. One easy trick that really helps focus the eye is burning the edges in a photo. Burning is darkening. So like paper is white and the background on your browser is probably white as well. If the image's edge compared with the paper or compared with the monitor is too light, our eye goes to it and basically leaves the frame. So basically burning the weak edges strengthens the image. And this is a really old technique, and you can go further by vignetting an image. And vignetting an image basically really darkens much more than the edges around often the center point of the image. And it was really popular with wedding photography in the 60s and 70s. Really, really popular. You could check out those old vignettes. Maybe tacky by today's standards, but very cool back then. Richard Sperry from our forum allowed me to use one of his images, and there's going to be a few more in the show notes, so please check those out. And he let me use his image to illustrate the point where darkening the edges of a photo will indeed make it pop harder. He took a lovely photo of Pears backlit, but the edges of his photo are just a little weak to my eye, and by strengthening them, I'm just going to illustrate the point that it makes the image as a whole stronger. Thanks so much, Richard, for allowing me to use this as a teaching tool. And finally, after you practice this for a while and you feel comfortable with these sort of guidelines, please feel free to break these points completely. You know, once you know the rules or guidelines, feel free to do a high key shot where it's a white on white, where your eye may wander. You know, there are always exceptions to these general points that I've just spoken about. So feel free to try whatever you like after knowing these concepts. And I guess that's going to do it for today's podcast. On the forum, the assignments for this month, the regular assignment is numbers. Just basically shoot a scene that incorporates a number in it. And our level 2 assignment is a point counterpoint, where basically people are taking shots that illustrate two competing ideas or points in the same image. If you're listening to this podcast and checking out the forum and just lurking on the forum and not joining, I encourage you to join. We're getting more members daily. It's a really friendly forum, and I really find the learning environment excellent. So yes, I run the forum, but we're all really friendly and welcoming. So please give it a shot. Our next podcast is going to be number 100. Can't believe I've done 100 of these, but I have. I already have several ideas and plans floating around in my head, and I will not reveal them now. You're going to have to wait just a little bit, but I hope to release it in the next month, let's say. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. You can subscribe really easily to this podcast via the blog, photography.ca/blog. You could subscribe by using iTunes or Google Reader really, really easily. And if anyone ever has any trouble, just shoot me an email at photography.ca@gmail.com, and it'll be more than my pleasure to guide you. Thanks so much again, everyone. Most of our listeners are still in warmer parts of the world. The weather's great, so there's no excuse to stop. So just get out there and keep on shooting. Bye for now, everyone. Thanks so much.